Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. We're up to the Gemara right after the two dots on the eighth line. So the Gemara says, Hamima enes ainla lo kenas lo pitui haktana ba alma isla mani rabbanan hidam riktana yesh lo kenas. So the Gemara infers from the earlier statement that it made regarding a mima enes. Again, the mima enes is the girl who does mion. The Gemara earlier told us that a girl who does mion is not entitled to kenas or pitui, meaning if she's raped or if she's seduced, she's not entitled to collecting that penalty, that fine. The implication is that a regular ktana is entitled to kenas, because again, it's only in the one exceptional case of the girl who does mion that she forfeits the kenas, implying that a regular ktana is entitled to a kenas. So the Gemara says that's reflective of the opinion of the Rabbanan, because the Rabbanan hold that kenas is not limited to a nara, which is kind of against what we've been, you know, what we've been learning this entire perek. The Rabbanan say no, that even a ketana is entitled to a kenas. The problem is ema seifa eilanis ein la lo kenas lo pitui also le Rav Meir de amar ketana ein la kenas. So then the problem is that the latter part of the Gemara told us that when a girl is an eilanis, in other words, meaning to say that she has no signs of physical maturity, so she's also not entitled to kanas or pitui. So the Gemara says that reflects the opinion of Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir holds that a ketana is not entitled to a kanas. And the Gemara points out, an islandess is unique from other categories of women in that she jumps straight from being a ketana to a bogeris. There is no middle stage of being a nara for a girl who's an islandess. So the Gemara just points out, Reisha Rabbanan v'seifa Rabbi Meir. In other words, it turns out that the former part of the Braisa reflects the opinion of the Rabbanan, namely that a ketana is entitled to a kenas, and the latter part reflects Rabbi Meir that she's not. So again, the Gemara is not necessarily asking a question, it's just pointing out that there's differing opinions in different parts of the Braisa. Okay, then the Gemara suggests, maybe you'll suggest as follows, maybe the entire Braisa really reflects the opinion of Rabbi Meir, and it's possible that when it comes specifically to the case of Mion, to the girl who does Mion, perhaps in that case, he's going to side with the opinion of Reb Yehuda, because Reb Yehuda happens to be of the opinion that a girl can do Mion up to and including the time that she's a Nara. So in other words, we're used to thinking of Mion as something that only a Ketana can do, but Reb Yehuda happens to hold that even a Nara can do Mion. So in other words, one could have argued as follows. Maybe the whole Braisa reflects Rabbi Meir, and he happens to side with Reb Yehuda, and he holds that even a Nara can do Mion. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Umi savar la v'hasanya ad masay habas mima enes ad shetovish te Cyrus Divra Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ache Yarba Shachar al Halavan. There's an explicit machlokas in Maseches Chulin about, in other words, until what stage or until what age can a girl do Mion? So according to Rabbi Meir, she can do Mion up to the time that she develops her Shtei Cyrus, the two pubic hairs, whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, she can do Mion all the way up to the time that there are more black hairs in that area, more so than white skin, which is, you know, which is far beyond the time of the development of Shtei Cyrus. So clearly, Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda are disagreeing about until what stage can a girl do Mion. So you can't, in other words, you can't claim that Reb Meir agrees with Reb Yehuda on this point. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo Reb Yehuda hi, uviktana sovar lakir Reb Meir. So then the Gemara kind of changes course a little bit. The Gemara says, well, maybe you can argue that the whole Gemara is really reflecting Reb Yehuda's position, and perhaps Reb Yehuda holds like Rabbi Meir when it comes to a ketana, that a ketana is not entitled to a kenas. But the Gemara also rejects that. Umi savar la v'ha'amar Reb Yehuda marav zo diver Rabbi Meir v'im isa zo diver Rabbi Meir v'Reb Yehuda miboile. The Gemara clearly attributes that opinion that a ketana is not entitled to a kenas to Rabbi Meir, and if it were true that Reb Yehuda conceded to Rabbi Meir, the Gemara should have said this is the opinion of both Rabbi Meir and Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara says, no. Haitana sover like Reb Meir b'chadu follow the Le b'chadu. The Gemara says, that's not such a question. You can simply suggest that this Tana holds like Rabbi Meir in one regard, but disagrees with him in another regard. Namely, he holds like Rabbi Meir when it comes to the fact that a Tana is not entitled to a Kenas, but he disagrees with Rabbi Meir's supposition when it comes to Mion, and he holds like Reb Yehuda that Mion can be done all the way until the time that she's a Nara. So in other words, this Tana is essentially kind of, you know, taking the opinion of Rabbi Meir in one respect, and Rabbi Yehuda in the other. Then the Gemara quotes another opinion. Rafram Amar Maimim Enes Haruuya Lemain. Rafram comes with a totally different opinion here and says that when the Gemara talks about a Mima Enes, it just means a girl who's fit or who's able to do Mion, which is basically another way of saying any girl who's a Ketana. So the Gemara then asks, Velis Niktana Kasha. So why didn't the Gemara just call her a Ketana? Why does it use the term Mima Enes if it just meant a Ketana? So the Gemara is not sure what the answer to that is. Okay. Then the Gemara said, Islandis Ainla Lo kanas velo pitui. We pointed out already yesterday that a girl who's an islandess is not entitled to kanas or pitui. If she's raped or seduced, she's not entitled to collect any sort of fine. So asks the Gemara, Ramini, hachareshes v'hashota v'ha'islandess, yesh lahen kanas v'yesh lahen tainas besulim, comes the Brice and says as follows. If you have a woman who's a chareshes, meaning to say that she's deaf-mute, or she's a shota, right, she's considered to have some sort of a mental incapacity, or she's an islandess, which is the part that's relevant for our Gemara, so she is entitled to a kanas if she's raped or seduced, and this next part of the Brice that we're going to come back to in a second, there is a potential for tainas besulim. Tainas besulim, again, this is kind of the foundation of the whole beginning of the Masechta. Tainas besulim means that the husband, in theory, could put forth a claim right after they get married and say that I thought I was marrying a woman who's a besula, and it turns out that she's not, and if it turns out that he's telling the truth and there are edim, she could theoretically, you know, be put to death. If there are no edim, then she could forfeit her ksuba. Again, that was the whole discussion we had at the beginning of the Masechta. So the Gemara right here makes 2 points. These three categories of women, a chareshes, shota, and an islandess, they are entitled to kanas, and also the husband can theoretically put forth a claim of tainas besulim. So it's clear from this brisa that we see that an islandess is in fact entitled to a kanas, which is against what we said before. So the Gemara says, hang on a second, v'hamay rumya, harameir harabat. And the Gemara says, why is this such an overwhelming question? There's a very simple answer to this question, namely, what is the opinion of Rabbi Meir, and what is the opinion of the Rabbana? Namely, Rabbi Meir was the one who said that a katana is not entitled to a kanas, and since an islandess, as we pointed out in the Gemara earlier, jumps from being a katana straight to a bogeris, there is no in-between stage of an ara, that's the opinion that says that an islandess is not entitled to a kanas, and the other opinion in the Brice that says that she is entitled to a kanas is clearly reflecting the opinion of the Rabbanan, who say that a katana is entitled to a kanas. So the Gemara then pushes back. The ka'arila, my ka'arila. So the Gemara says, so then what was the hava? I mean, what was the Gemara even asking in the first place? It's such an obvious answer. One opinion is the Rabbanan, and one is Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, no. Mishum de'isle l'mirma acharit de'ilavei. There's a different contradiction that you can pose in this regard, namely, hachareshes v'hashota v'habogeres umukas eitz, ein lahen tainas besulim, hasuma v'ailanis yesh lahen tainas besulim, sochas omer mishum Rabbi Meir, suma ein la tainas besulim. So we're going to get back to some of these details of this contradiction in a second, but for right now, the only point that's relevant for us to extract is that the Gemara says that regarding a chareshes and a shota, a woman who, again, who's a deaf mute, or a woman who's a shota, where basically in halacha they don't really have any das, the Gemara says regarding these women that the husband has no right to put forth a claim of tainas besulim. Meaning, if let's say a man gets married to a woman who's a chareshes or a shota, there's an automatic presumption that she's automatically not a besula. So that means if the husband wakes up the next morning and comes to Bezdin yelling and screaming that my wife's not a besula, we say, of course your wife's not a besula. She was never supposed to be a besula, and therefore your claim is meaningless. We throw it out the window. So the Gemara says, that's the focus, that's the question, that's the issue that the Gemara is picking up on. And again, we're going to get back to some of the other details in here about a blind woman and about a mukas eitz in a second. So the Gemara says that was the issue that was bothering the Gemara. So the Gemara says, no, that's also not a question. Amar Rav Sheshes Lokashia, HaRabban Gamliel VaHaRab Yehoshua. This is the famous machlokas that we already referenced back at the end of the first parak, back on Daf Yud Beis, the famous machlokas between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. What was that machlokas about? So basically, let's say you had the following. You had a couple that just got married, and everyone agrees that at the moment that they were married, the woman was not a besula. In other words, the problem is that they're arguing how and when she lost her virginity. So the wife is claiming, Misha Erastani Nanasti, I was raped after Eris. And again, this is obviously assuming that her husband's not a Kohen. If it's a Kohen, it's a totally different issue. But let's assume that for a second the husband's not a Kohen, and she claims, I was raped after Erisin. And basically, it's your problem. It's your fault. Because at the time of Erisin, I was a besula, and the fact that I got raped afterwards is not my fault, and therefore, I'm still in tied to the full value of the ksuba. The husband, on the other hand, is claiming that no, he says, ad shelo erastich, you were raped prior to Eris. And again, not necessarily saying that it's your fault, obviously, again, if the woman was raped, it's not her fault, but the issue is that the woman didn't disclose the fact that she wasn't a virgin prior to Eris. That's the issue. So the husband says, because you never told me that you weren't a basula, I don't have to pay you either any of the ksuba, or maybe I only have to pay you part of the ksuba. That was also a discussion we had back in the first parak. So the Gemara says, presumably, this machlokas, this question about whether a woman who's a chareshes or a shota, whether the husband is able to put forth such a claim of tainas besulim, this seems to be just kind of a reframing of that machlokas earlier in the Masechta between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. So the Gemara pushes back. The Gemara says, Emer de shamas leila Rabban Gamliel, heicha de katoana ihi, heicha de lo katoana ihi mi shamas le. The Gemara says, but hang on a second. That machlokas earlier, back on Daf Yud Beis, was assuming that the husband and wife were both putting forth claims. The wife says, I was raped after Eristan. The husband says, no, you were raped prior to Eristan. And he never disclosed it. So when they're both putting forth claims, okay, there already makes sense. It makes sense a little bit, at least the position of Rabban Gamliel, that we can give her words credibility and that we can believe her. Here, however, the woman is not putting forth any claim. It's just the husband coming along and saying, you're not a basula. So maybe there's reason to distinguish between that case on Daf Yud Beis and our case over here. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. In Kevan de Amar Rabban Gamliel Mehimna, Kigon Zo Psach Picha Le'ilemhu, the Gemara says that really it's not true. Even though the wife is not technically putting forth a claim, this is what the Gemara calls Psach Picha Le'ilem. That's an allusion to a pasuk in Mishlei. Psach Picha Le'ilem literally means that we open the mouth of the person who's mute. Sometimes a person, either literally or figuratively, is not able to put forth a claim. So let's say a person is a cheresh or a charesh, the woman is deaf mute, she literally can't talk. So she has no physical capability to come into Bezdin and say, you know, I was raped later on, or I'm really a basula, or whatever it is. She can't counter the husband's claim. So in that scenario, if you were to accept Rabban Gamliel's premise, we would so to speak put words into her mouth and essentially offer a counterclaim on her behalf. Sometimes you have this with people who are physically able to offer a claim, but for some other reason they're not able to actually offer. Let's say, for example, you have Yorshim who are not knowledgeable about their father's estate, and let's say one of the father's creditors comes and claims that the father owed him something, so the Yorshim have no idea what their father's business dealings were. So sometimes the Gemara employs this idea, right? Again, the Aramaic term that the Gemara uses often throughout Seder Nezikin is the term ta'aninan, that will often put a claim into their mouths, will essentially supply them with the claim if they're not able either literally or, you know, metaphorically to put forth such a claim. Okay, then we said the habogeres ein latinus besulim. We also mentioned that a bogeres, once a girl is beyond 12 and a half, she is, so then any claim that the husband makes that she's not a besula is essentially a moot point, because we already know that a girl, once she's 12 and a half, is biologically not a basula anymore. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. The Ha'amar Rav, Bogeres, Nosnila, Laila Harishon. So the Gemara tells us in Meseches Nida that for the first night that a Bogeres gets married, so the couple is permitted to engage in relations as many times as they want on that first night. The presumption being is that any blood that she sees on that night is going to be a function of her hymen breaking. It's going to be what we call dam besulim. Dam besulim is not the same thing as dam nida. They're totally different in halakha. Now, whether practically we can distinguish between the two is kind of a different issue, but in theory, dam besulim is not dam nida. So if you knew for a fact that a woman was bleeding, but it was only dam besulim, you would still be allowed to have relations with her. So the Gemara tells us that so let's say you get married to a woman when she's 25 years old, so you can have relations as many times as you want on the first night, because any blood that she sees that night is considered dam besulim. So doesn't that disprove our previous contention that once the girl becomes a bogeres, she loses her besulim? It's not true. Otherwise, the second you had relations and the second she started to bleed, you would just have to automatically assume it was dam nida and not dam besulim. So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says that there are two different types of claims that a husband could put forth. The first type of claim is what we call tainas damim. Tainas damim is the claim that my wife did not bleed after I had relations with her. That is a believable claim. In other words, that is not beyond the realm of possibility to claim that maybe the wife didn't bleed. However, the other possible claim is what we call Pesach Pasuach. Pesach Pasuach is basically another way of saying that her hymen was already broken open. So in other words, that claim is only a valid claim if the girl, let's say, is a Ketana or a Nara. There you can legitimately claim Pesach Pasuach. However, once the girl is a Bogeres already, so we already know that Pesach Pasuach. Again, this is without getting into the specific biological discussion about, you know, whether these things really apply today, but the Gemara's presumption was that once a girl turns 12 and a half, so then her besulim are lost. Again, that's not to say that she can't bleed anymore and that the blood is not necessarily a function of the besulim. It just means that when the husband puts forth a claim, it says Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, that, you know, I found that the hymen was open. Of course the hymen is open. Once the girl turns 12 and a half, that's the reality. That's the biological reality. So his claim is completely a moot point. That claim of Pesach Pasuach would only be valid if the girl was a Ketana or a Nara. Okay. Then we said, Sumcha Somer Mishum Rabbi Meir Suma Ein Latinus Besulim, My Taima De Sumcha. So we pointed out earlier in the Gemara that there was a machlokas about whether a blind woman is entitled, in other words, whether if let's say a husband marries a blind woman, so can he legitimately put forth a claim and say, my wife was not a basula, or do we say, of course your wife is not a basula? So according to the Tanna Kamma, there is a legitimate claim to be made. In other words, the presumption is, of course, she's a basula, and now he's claiming otherwise. Whereas according to Sumchas, there is no legitimate claim of tainus basulim if the wife is blind. So what's the reasoning for Sumchas? Amar Reb Zeira, v'pnei shenechbetes al gabei karka. The presumption is that when the woman is blind, she at some point she tripped on the ground, she broke her basulim. She might not have even realized it because she was blind. So the assumption is that her basulim are most likely broken. So the Gemara asks, kulunami chabute mechabte. So the Gemara says, well, why is that? concern not legitimate for all women? Why is it only a concern that specifically a blind woman tripped and broke her besulin? So the Gemara says, "Kulhu roos umaris liman zo ina roa ve'ina mara li'ima." The Gemara explains that because regular women, if they trip, would go to their mothers, and their mothers would figure out if her besulin were broken, and then they would know, and they would inform the husband in advance. Whereas a blind woman wouldn't necessarily even be aware of that, and she wouldn't even think to go show her mother. So there's a possibility that she would be unaware of the fact that she had broken her besulin. Okay. Then we said the hayotzeis mishum shemra ein lo kenas velo pitui. So we also pointed out earlier that if a woman is being let go of because of some sort of a rumor that was abounding that she had relations, that she had an affair, so then again she forfeits her right to collecting kenas and pitui. So the Gemara asks hayotzeis mishum shemra bas skila hi. If the rumors are true that the woman had an affair, she's chayev skila. Forget about not collecting the money for rape and seduction. She's chayev skila. So the Gemara says no. Amar Rav Sheshes Hachi Ka'amar Mishe Yatsa Aleha Shem Rabbi Aldusa Eila Lo Kenasa Lo Pitui. We're merely talking about a scenario where there were rumors that were abounding. There's no hard evidence that we know definitively that this girl had an affair, but there were rumors spreading that maybe she did something when she was younger. So in that case, if there were rumors that were spreading, then she forfeits her right to collect the Kenas and Pitui. So the Gemara says Amar Rav Papa Shmamina Haishtara Reya La Magvina Be. We see from this Gemara that if you have a shtar and there's something fishy about the shtar, there are rumors that are spreading, maybe it's a forgery, again, we're not 100% sure, you're not allowed to use that type of a shtar to collect with. So the Gemara clarifies, Hei chidami, ilema denafa kala ale de shtara de zaifahu. So, in other words, presumably the case by the shtar would be that there are rumors abounding that this is a forgery. So dichvasa hacha denafak ala kala dizinai. So what would the parallel be in the case of the woman? The parallel would be that there are rumors abounding that the woman had an affair. The problem is, says the Gemara, v'ha'amar Rava, yatza l'shem mizana b'yirin choshishin la. Rava tells us in Meseches Gittin explicitly that even if there are rumors abounding that a woman had relations, that she was mizana, those are just rumors. They're completely unfounded. If there's no evidence to back it up, we don't listen to those rumors. Not only do we not listen to those rumors, the Gemara in Gittin says even a kohen is allowed to marry her unless, of course, the rumors are established and are verified. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela de asu be treva amre lididu tvatani beisura. So what's the case regarding regarding znus? So the case regarding znus is the following. Two witnesses come into Bezdin and they claim this woman propositioned us to try and have relations with us. They're claiming that she is actually, or she either she attempted or she was literally mazana. So the Gemara says, dichva sahacha de asu be treva amre lididu amre lehu zaifuli. So what would the parallel be by the shtar, where two witnesses come and claim this guy tried to proposition us to forge a shtar for him? So the Gemara explains, Bishlama Hassam Shchichei Prutzen Elohacha Imhu Huchzak Kol Yisrami Huchzaku. The Gemara says, I understand in the case of the affair. So the presumption is that the majority of people are Prutzim, they're very loose in their moral character. But just because one person is suspect of forging a shtar, does that mean that we now have to suspect everyone of being forgers for shtaros? So the Gemara says, no, hachanami, kevin to kamahadara ziyufa, emer ziyufa zayafa chasav. The Gemara says, you're right. We're not necessarily suspecting everyone on the planet of being forgers when it comes to shtaros, but there is very good reason to now assume that this shtar is a forgery, because two witnesses just came in and told us that guy tried to proposition them to forge a shtar on their behalf, on his behalf, so we have very solid grounds to now presume that this shtar was in fact a forgery. So it's not that we're now throwing shade and suspecting everyone on the planet of being forgers, but this particular shtar has something very negative going against it, where it makes us believe that the star is in fact a forgery. Okay, so then,
I'm just confused here today. All of these people that we're talking about, the blind woman, children, this,
mm-hmm.
It seems from here that the implication is that they were all married. I thought the only point where the fine is where the guy seduces the woman before marrying her and she's either a nara or a katana. Where does that fine come in to pay the husband
Well, the din doesn't necessarily depend on whether she's married or not. Again, it's part of the issue that we were discussing since the beginning of the perek is how old does she have to be in other words, in order to be entitled to the kenas for rape or seduction. So we've been assuming until now that she had to be a nara, and we pointed out that maybe the rabbanan think that even a katana, but there's no indication that she has to be married. In fact, if anything, it sounds like most of the cases are where she's not.
That's what I'm saying. Quite the contrary.
Correct. Exactly. This halacha has nothing to do with whether she's married. It has to do with whether she's lost her besulim, right? So, in other words, generally speaking, you would say once the girl gets married and already had relations with her husband, then these halachas no longer apply anyway, right? Because,
exactly.
Because right, yeah. So that's the presumption behind all these cases. Okay, so says the Mishnah, the elu she'ein lahen kanas. The following women are not entitled to kanas. Habal hagiyores yal hashivuya val hashivcha sheniftu v'shen isgayru v'shen ishtacharu yeseros habanos shalosh shanim v'yom echad. So the Mishnah says if a person went ahead and had relations with a woman who converted, with a woman who was taken captive and eventually released, or with a maidservant who was freed, and assuming that they were all over the age of 3 when they had relations, because if they're under the age of 3, we know that in halacha, you know, bia with the woman under 3 is meaningless. Rabbi Yehuda omer, then Rabbi Huda comes and says that if you have a woman who was taken captive, who was redeemed or released, so she retains her regular status of Kedusha, meaning to say we can assume that she didn't have relations, that she wasn't raped or anything, even if she's over the age of 3, even if she's over Bas Mitzvah, it doesn't make a difference, we can assume that she's still a Basula. Then the Mishnah says, Haba Albito, Albas Bito, Albas Bino, Albas Ishto, Albas Bino, Albas Bita, Ein Lohen Kenaz Mimnesha Mischai Benavsho, Shem Yisasan Bidei Bezdin, again, this is like the ABCs of Kimle B'Darabim, which we've already spoken about countless times this week. The idea basically being that if a person has relations with a woman who's basically forbidden to him incestually, whether it's his daughter or granddaughter or wife's daughter, again, all the different variations that the Mishnah lists. So the bottom line is that you're not chayav to pay a kanas, even if she's a nara, even if she's a basula, whatever the case is, because you're chayav misa in all these cases. So of course, we, you know, the famous rule of Kimle B'Darabim is going to kick in. Okay.
Well, what happened? Yeah.
Okay, we're going to discuss that in a second. We're going to get to that in a second. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara explains. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Dosa, Amru Davar Echad. Rabbi Huda had Amr. So Rabbi Huda, again, is the opinion that we just quoted a second ago, that even though the girl was taken captive, we still presume that she's a Basula. Rabbi Dosa Desanya, Shivuya Ocheles Bisruma Div Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa says that even if a woman was taken captive, let's say she was a Bas Kohen, she's still allowed to continue eating Truma. Meaning, again, we assume that she wasn't raped. So Amar Rabbi Dosa, Vechima Asala Rabbi Halaz, Vechim Ibnesha Miech Labin Dadeb, Solomon Hak. Just because, in other words, Rabbi Dosa's logic is to suggest as follows. He says, just because the Arab, captor was playing around with her, was fooling around with her, was squeezing her breasts or whatever, there's no indication, there's no proof that the woman was actually violated, right? So we have no evidence for a fact that she was violated. So until we know that for a fact, there's no reason for us to, to disqualify her from marrying a Kohen. Amar Rabba Dilmalohi, Ad Kan Loka Amar Rabbi Huda Hacha Ela Shaloya Hechote Niskar, Aval Hasam Kirabanan Svirle. So the Gemara pushes back on this point. The Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe one can argue that which Rabbi Yehuda said in our Mishnah, that, well, if the girl was taken into captivity, that we assume she's still a Basula, maybe it's not objectively the case that we automatically assume that she's a Basula. It's just that we don't want to, incentivize anyone who's going to sin. In other words, if it turns out that the girl, in other words, if there's suspicion that this girl might have been raped while she was in captivity, so people, so the assumption is that maybe people are gonna have relations, are gonna sleep around, or maybe the woman's gonna end up forfeiting her ksuba. But over there, in that case where she's taken captive regarding truma, so maybe we in fact hold like the Rabbanan, where the assumption is that no, we do have to assume that the girl was raped, and therefore she does forfeit her right to continue eating truma. Inami ad kan lo ka'amar Rabbi Dosa hasam ela b'shuma de Rabbanan aval knas. Another possible distinction is that truma b'zman hazeh is only midrabanan, right? The fact is that if you're not an Eretz Yisrael, truma is only midrabanan, but the idea that you have to pay a kenas if you raped a girl who's a nara between 12 and 12 and a half, that's a din d'oraisa. So again, perhaps there's room to distinguish and say that when it comes to dinim d'oraisa, we're going to side with the rabbanan. Fine. The Gemara says, Amar le'abaye, the taimi de Rabbi Huda hacha shelo yehechote niskaru, is the reasoning behind Rabbi Huda in the Mishnah. In other words, that which he said, that we assume that the girl who was taken captive is really still a basula. Is that simply to disincentivize people sinning or people profiting from their sins? V'hasaniya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shivuya Shenishbeis Harehi B'Kdushasa Afilu Bas Eser Shanim Ksubasa Masayim. So the din is that if a woman was taken into captivity, we assume she's a basula. Even if she's 10 years old, she still gets her full value of the ksuba. V'hasa Maishalo Yehechote Niskarika. There's no sinner in that case. If a person married a woman who was previously in captivity, you don't say, oh, this guy who's marrying her is sinning. He's not doing anything wrong. He wants to get married. The din is that he has to pay her the full value of the ksuba, which implies that Rabbi Yehuda objectively believes that this woman is a basul. It's not just some tangential thing that we're trying to disincentivize sinners. So the Gemara says, you're right. Hasam nami dilma mimne v'lanafsi. The Gemara says, you're right. It's not that we're disincentivizing sinners, but the bottom line is that we also don't want people to back away and not marry her. It's almost, you know, if you think about it, it's almost a little bit counterintuitive. In other words, the higher valuation her ksuba is, the more people are going to want to marry her because they realize that she's a basula, right? If you knock down her ksuba to a mere 100 zuz, people are going to realize, you know, she's quote unquote damaged goods. But if you say that her ksuba is still worth 200 zuz, people are going to realize that she's a basula. So we almost bump up her ksuba in the hopes that people actually believe and people actually see that she's still a basula. So fine. Then the Gemara asks, the Savar Rabbi Yehuda b'kedusha sakayma. Does Rabbi Yehuda really believe that a girl taken into captivity still retains her status as a basula? V'hasanya hapoda es hashivuya yisaena meyid ba lo yisaena. Rabbi Yehuda omer benkach uvenkach lo yisaena. There's a machlokas about the following. A man goes ahead and redeems a girl who was taken into captivity, and so the Gemara says if he redeems her, he can marry her. But if he testified about her and claims that she's still a basula, then he's not allowed to marry her. Rabbi Yehuda says he's never allowed to marry her under any circumstance. So the Gemara now has to clarify this. Hagufa kasha. Amar hapoda es hashivuya yisaena v'hadar tana meyid ba lo yisaena. The Gemara says, what, because you testified that she's a basula, that's reason to not marry her? If anything, that would be more reason to marry her. If you have evidence, if you have Edim claiming that this woman is still a basula, that she wasn't raped, so that should be all the more reason that you should be allowed to marry her. So the Gemara says, no. Halo kash, yahachi kamar. Hapoda es hashivuya umeir ba yisaena, meir ba kedi lo yisaena. What the Braisa meant to say was as follows. If you redeem a woman who was taken into captivity, and you also testify that she was a basula, then you can marry her. However, if all you do is testify, but you don't go out of your way to actually redeem her, so then you're not allowed to marry her. So the Gemara says, okay, but mikol makom kasha the Rabbi Yehuda. We still have a problem within the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, because it's clear from this Gemara that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're never allowed to marry this woman, whether you redeemed her, whether you testified about her being a basula. Rabbi Yehuda says clearly that you're not allowed to marry her, and yet in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda explicitly said that we assume that she's still a basula. So what's wrong with marrying her? So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar of Papa, Ema Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ben Kachu, Ben Kachisa, and you have to actually reverse that which Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Yehuda actually really said that you're always allowed to marry her. You can marry her whether you only testified about her, whether you actually redeemed her. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you would be allowed to marry her under all circumstances. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rav Huna Barei de Rabbi Yehoshua Omer, La'olam Kidiktani Rabbi Yehuda. Really, it's as we taught initially, that really Rabbi Yehuda says that you can never marry her. And the Gemara explains, Rabbi Yehuda L'divram de Rabbanan Kamer Lehu, L'didi Ben Kachu Ven Kachisa Ena, Elo L'didchu Ben Kachu Ven Kach Lo Yisa Ena Mibayelai. So, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, according to me, it makes sense because I hold you can marry this woman either way, meaning whether you merely testified about her or whether you actually went out of your way to redeem her, either way, you're allowed to marry her. But according to you, the Rabbanan, the Gemara should have said, either way, you're not allowed to marry her. Why does the Gemara start drawing all these distinctions about whether you only testified, whether you also redeemed her? According to Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of the Rabbanan, the Gemara should have just said, you're never allowed to marry her, because that seemingly is what the Rabbanan hold. So the Gemara says, no, the Rabbanan, hapoda es hashivuya umeid ba yisaena, lo shade inish zuze bichdi, meid ba kidi lo yisaena, shema inam nasan. But the Gemara says, no, that the Rabbanan draw this distinction, because they say as follows: if you went ahead and redeemed the woman, and you also testified that she was a basula, then you're allowed to marry her, because people are not going to throw their money away for no reason. If you were not 100% certain that the woman was a basula, you would be throwing your money down the drain. Whereas, if you simply testified about her, so there's a concern that maybe the guy was setting his eyes on her, he wanted to have relations with her, it's not 100%, he's not financially committing himself, so in that case, we're not able to believe it. Okay, then the Gemara says, Rami le'Rav Papa bar Shmuel le'Rav Yosef. The Savar Rabbi Yehuda b'Kedusha. Okay, the Gemara again questions Rabbi Yehuda's premise. Is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the woman is really still a basula if she was taken captive? V'hasanya hagiores shenizgayra v'roa sadam. Rabbi Yehuda omer daya shaita. Rabbi Yosi omer harehi kechol hanashim umetama meyes leisu mipkida lepkida utzricha lahamten gimel chadashim divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi matir le'aris v'li nase miyad. So the Gemara has the following din. This is a Gemara that appears. This is really a Tosefta that appears in Maseches Nida. The Tosefta says, let's have a woman who converted, and then on the day of her conversion, she started to menstruate. She saw dam nida. So now the question becomes, how far back do we have to assume that she was Nida? Now, in general, if a woman bleeds, this is the opening Mishnah Maseches Nida, there's a famous machlokas between Shammai and Hillel about whether we assume that this is the first time she's bleeding, only from this moment on, and only the truma and kachim she handles from this point forward are going to be tamei, but anything she touched before this point is totally fine. Or maybe we say no, like Hillel, that you have to go back already, you know, we have to assume anything she touched since her last time that she did a bedika is tamei. We happen to pass the chacham in this middle ground, that we basically go back either 24 hours or until her last bedika, whichever one came first. So now the question is, what about for a woman who converted and now she's bleeding? So according to Rabbi Huda, we just go from this point forward. He holds like Shammai, you go from this point forward, and anything that she touched or handled before is meaningless. Rabbi Yossi says, no, we treat her like a regular Jewish woman, and basically we either go back 24 hours or to her last bedika, whichever was first. Then the Gemara has another point about the fact that after a woman converts, she cannot get married right away. She needs to wait 3 months for getting remarried. This is the famous thing we spoke a lot about back in Yevamos called Havchana, right? The fact is that after a woman gets widowed or divorced, or in this case converts, she can't get married right away because there's a concern that maybe she was pregnant from a previous marriage or from a previous relationship. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, she has to wait 3 months so that we know who the father of the child is, whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, she can get married right away. But what do you see clearly from this Gemara? You see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're not treating this Gioras, we're not treating this convert like she's a regular, in other words, like she's a regular woman, because we're allowing her, in other words, we're insisting that she has to wait 3 months, and that means that we're concerned that she might have had relations. So the Gemara says that's not a good proof. Amar le Gioras Ashvuya Karamis Gioras Lamanatra Nafsha Shivuya Manatra Nafsha. The Gemara says these are two different cases. One case is a woman who was taken into captivity. One case is a woman who converted. They're two totally different cases. A woman who's taken into captivity is going to try her utmost to make sure that she's not violated, if possible. Whereas a woman who converted, that's not necessarily going to be on her radar screen. So the Gemara says these two cases are completely not comparable.